everyone. Welcome to the podcast, She Reads. This is she, Alma Limon, always grateful to you for tuning in. In today's episode, we will be talking about love, women, 19th century, and everything in between. Basically, what it was like to be loved and to love someone as a woman in the 19th century. So this idea came from a book that I read like a year ago that was for a class, and the class was named like the book, Love Letters of Great Men and Women. And I loved the book. I loved the letters, and especially I was captivated by this letter written by George Sand. But before we get right into the episode, I would like to chit-chat for a bit with you guys just to let you know how life is going, how I am holding up, and just to make sure, just for you to make sure I am not a robot, that sort of thing. But honestly, to be really, really honest, there's not a lot going on because, again, I really do not leave my house, as probably most of you. So I thought that instead of just talking about what I had for breakfast today, I would give you a little writing prompt from this book that I have called 300 Writing Prompts, and hopefully you'll find some inspiration to answer it and to start journaling. Just grab a notebook or a sheet of paper and just answer to this, see where your mind goes. I promise you, you're going to have a lot of fun with this. And I wanted to do this because I follow a lot of Instagram accounts about like journaling, and especially women that just journal through life. And I find that very inspiring. And sometimes when I read the comments, a lot of people are like, oh, I wish I could do that, but I am not a writer. And it's like, you don't have to be a writer to journal. It is just a way to talk to yourself. And I feel like now it is a very important time to be comfortable with your own company and to enjoy it. I'll read to you this question, and you are free to answer if you want. I will write it down in the show notes. And the question is, do you prefer to dance with no one watching, with a group of friends, or with one special partner? I really like this question. I guess I should describe the advantages of each. Okay, so dance with no one watching, that is a must for me, like at least once a day I need to do that, especially when I finish like a task or like a, you know, an assignment for school, like right when I submit it, I have to like, okay, dance break. If I'm getting ready, I will perform. That's a must. And I just think it's a way to release the stress and kind of to reset. So it is very, very essential, at least to me. With a group of friends, though, I don't know, because that's a good one too. And I think that, you know, you are with the right crew when there's almost like not a difference between dancing on your own and dancing with them. It's almost like they are not really like a different person. Like you're all the same, because it doesn't really matter if you look, you know, dumb or whatever, you just feel really comfortable. And I felt this way in, actually last time I remember feeling this way, it was in my 23rd birthday, my last birthday. I actually podcasted about it, and me and my two best friends, we went to this gay bar, and we really were dancing like no one was watching. And it's just, there's something just beautiful about dancing with people that you're just comfortable with, and you just feel like very in the moment. And you even forget about yourself. So I really like that, especially if you're drunk, but the right amount of drunk, so you would actually remember it the next day. So, and actually someone special, I don't think I've danced with someone special. I know that's kind of sad. Like I've had obviously people that have been special and I've dated and fallen in love, I think, but I don't think I've ever danced with them, like in that sense. And I feel like I would get extremely nervous if I had to, because I'm not a good dancer. And I feel like probably if we're like in a relationship for years, probably we would be friends at that point. But before then, I feel like I would be super duper nervous. So I don't know, final answer, I'm gonna go with dancing with a group of friends. Yes. So, okay, with that being said, let's dive right into today's episode because it is a good one, but I feel like it's going to be a long one, so let's just get started. This is your chance to be loved in the 19th century. So, let's go back to the 19th century when Aurore Dupin changes her name to George Sand to be respected as a writer. This was a world where the idea of a woman incorporating into the intellectual world was rejected. It wasn't even an idea. Women were not writers, just women who write. So back in the 19th century, and honestly the early 20th, women were seen almost like a different species. This is one of the reasons I enjoy history, because it gives us an opportunity to look back and look at the progress that has been made regarding women. I know there are still a million reasons to be angry and sad about the way people treat women today, like, don't get me started, but also we have to give credit to the people that have made progress possible. And again, I know there's still so much to do. I still can't believe that a word invented in the late 70s to define a crime in which women are killed for being women. It's unbelievable that that became a concept. And even more unbelievable, the fact that femicides are still a worldwide problem today. Even in countries where homicide rates are falling, femicides continue to grow. And it breaks my heart to be part of a country where approximately 10 women are killed every day. And 70% of Mexican women report not feeling safe. 70% in 2020. Well, I think it was 2019 when this search was made, this study, but whatever. So sometimes we need history, not to, especially, you know, when I read stuff like this and it's everywhere in the media, sometimes I need history not to justify the injustice that we still have to deal with today, but to find some solace in knowing that things have been worse and they could be worse. So, George Sand, right? She was very much busy with making herself part of discussions, conversations among men, and she wanted to get her points across among them in times when doing so for women was nearly impossible. Impossible to the point where the only way to make it possible was to fit into a male template. So, women had to change their name, like she did to George Sand when she published her first work, her first novel. And, you know, George Sand was one of the first women to take it a step further and also dress like a man and smoke like a man and talk like a man. So in a way, this was a quick fix for her in order to fit into that template of what an intelligent and independent person should have to look like at the time. And sadly, I think it's not too far from today's reality. Still, when I think about a powerful woman like Angela Merkel or Hillary Clinton, I think of them like in a suit. So why is it so hard to be taken seriously in a dress? Let me know. But okay, back to George. So she was born in 1804. She was the daughter of an army officer. After his death, she lived with her grandmother. At 18, she married Casimir de Devon, the son of a baron. 9 years later, she left him and went to Paris with her two children. From here, you can already tell she was not playing games, because getting a divorce at the time was not acceptable. And I actually think they did not like legally get a divorce. I think she just left with her children. So even more badass. This would be the beginning of her love affairs history, including romantic affairs with a number of very well-known artists, including Frédéric Chopin, Alfred de Musset, Gustave Flaubert, Franz Liszt, Eugène Delacroix, Victor Hugo, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Marie Dorval. I mean, yeah, women included. I mean, there are no proofs nor doubts that they were together like that. I mean, Marie Dorval and George Sand, but they would spend a lot of time together. And the way George would write about her just makes you wonder if they were ever more than friends. I think they were, but we will never know. So when I was reading about George Sand, and I read this paragraph that says, Sand's reputation came into question when she began sporting men's clothing in public, which she justified enabling her to circulate more freely in Paris than most of her female contemporaries. And it got me thinking about this female contemporaries and what an ideal woman at the time looked like, or what they were supposed to look like. So I found this Parisian painter, very famous at the time for portraying rich women, and I really enjoyed his paintings. His name is Auguste Toulmouche. I will write his name on the show notes because I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. So I also shared his art on my Instagram, so if you want to check it out. So basically he portrayed women in a very Pride and Prejudice little women vibes. You know, the long, fluffy, flowery, scandalous, very beautiful dresses that also look very uncomfortable. Like, I could not imagine if I had to dress like that to prove that I am a woman or to feel like a woman. But it's funny because I watch these movies and I'm like, that is so beautiful. I want to dress like that. I wish we could still dress like that. And then I realize that as I am speaking, as I am saying that, I am sitting in the couch, legs wide open, in my H&M pants, which I bought in the men's section, and my oversized hoodie, and I'm like, I'm good. So what I want to say, I think that there is something in the way we dress that defines the things that we're able to do. And that's why I feel like when a girl is forced to, and I don't mean like literally forced to, but it's just like she's expected to wear a skirt or a dress, she has to behave in a certain way, like sit with her legs crossed, and like she cannot be running around and playing sports and stuff like that, because, you know, like she had to keep composure and all of that. While men are always wearing pants and they're able to do whatever they want. So I feel like George Sand kind of wore this suit to feel more free and be able to do whatever she wanted. Also, I read this very interesting, was like a little, I don't know what it was. I think it was an essay by Charlotte Despard. She wrote something very interesting, and this was like 1850s. So, way after like George Sand, not really way after George Sand was born, but I mean after. So she writes, "The woman of the well-to-do classes was made to understand early that the only door open to life at once easy and respectable was that of marriage. Therefore, she had to depend upon her good looks according to the ideals of the men of her day, her charm, her little drawing room arts." And I read this because it is relevant to understand the success that Indiana, George Sand's first novel, had. In this novel, she talked about marriage and what it represented in the 19th century, and it basically proposes this idea of marriage as a license to raise women as an object that must be liked. And, you know, women grew up with this list of things they had to do or they could not do in order to be liked, and therefore they could get married, which was the end of all means. So this novel was super polemical, because is polemical a word in English? I hope so. Because it talked about how women felt. So for the first time, women were not only able to be liked, but also, surprisingly and shockingly, women were also able to like and dislike and to feel. Crazy, right? And I think she was one of the first writers to do so and to write from that perspective. She also makes a very interesting point of how women were supposed to be raised, like, you know, very ladylike, quote unquote ladylike, and pure, and not to talk about sex. And once they get married, sex was kind of the only thing that men expected to receive from them, and how scary it was for women at the time, who were, by the way, married at such a young age, to be expected to give something that they had no previous knowledge of. But okay, so now let's talk about her love affairs. So I can read the letter that I so desperately want to share. So she was known to be a serial dater, which, of course, was unheard of for women at the time. So she not only dated a lot, but dated very famous men, like not only quantity, also quality. Just kidding. She dated very famous men at the time. And I guess that from the list that I previously read to you, we can see that she had a type. And, you know, this type of a very dandy kind of man, well-dressed, well-positioned, famous by whatever they were making, music, poetry, writing, acting. And I think this is why she wanted to date him. For instance, Chopin, who she met in 1838 when he was very famous, he was a recognized musician. She would hear that music and think, I want to get to know him. But actually, when they met, Chopin didn't reciprocate this feeling because he was, in fact, terrified with this woman that was, like, smoking and wearing pants and basically speaking out. And he said he wasn't interested. But then they ended up being in a relationship for years. But we're not going to talk about that romance here. We're actually going to go a little bit back in time, pre-Chopin era, when George was dating Alfred de Musset, a very important poet at the time, who was 7 years younger than her. I asked in my Instagram if age mattered when it came to love. And a lot of the answers were like, it depends, you know, it depends if the woman is the younger or the amount of years or whatever. And I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. I feel like, I think, again, it depends how old is both of the parties. Like, it depends. Like, I feel like if you're 20 and the guy is 40 or vice versa, I feel like, it's kind of like, okay. Or 30 and 50 could work. But then if you're 60 and the other person is 80, I feel like that would be weird. But anyway, I digress. George Sand called Alfred de Musset my child, and she treated him as such, which was weird. But I guess on the inside, a lot of women feel like we need to take care of the guy we're seeing, or that we have to fix it. I mean him, not it. And some women are attracted to that. Personally, I can't relate. I see an issue and I'm like, bye. But anyway, in the middle of their relationship, they took a trip to Venice. And actually, George Sand had to ask permission to Alfred's mother to let him go to Venice with her. I cannot see myself doing that ever. But once in Venice, George gets sick and Alfred kind of didn't care about that. And he went out and about by himself. But it is not all tragedy, people, because then George ends up falling in love. I mean, that's a strong way to put it. But she does ends up developing feelings. Yep, that's better. For the doctor that is taking care of her. I know. And it is to him that she addresses my favorite letter of the entire book. So I have to confess that it did burst my bubble a little bit to find out that this letter that I love so much, this love letter that I love, was written to this doctor. And this relationship was more like a fling that lasted for a couple weeks because she was sick in Venice in a trip she made with her actual lover. But nevertheless, it is a beautiful letter and I would like to share it with you, some parts of it at least, and also my thoughts in it. So yeah, I'll start reading. So this is a letter George Sand wrote to Pietro Pagello, sent from Venice, July 1834. Born under different skies, we have neither the same thoughts nor the same language. Have we, perhaps, hearts that resemble one another? The ardor of your glances, the violent clasp of your arms, the fervor of your desire tempt me and frighten me. I do not know whether to combat your passion or to share it. One does not love like this in my country. Beside you, I am no more than a pale statue that regards you with desire, with trouble, with astonishment. I do not know if you truly love me, and I shall never know it. What is there in that masculine bosom, behind that superb brow, those leonine eyes? Do you ever have a nobler, finer thought, a fraternal, pious sentiment? When you sleep, do you dream that you're flying towards heaven? When men wrong you, do you still trust in God? Shall I be your companion or your slave? Do you desire me or do you love me? When your passion is satisfied, will you thank me? When I have made you happy, will you know how to tell me so? Do you know what I am, and does it trouble you not to know it? Am I for you and a known being who must be sought for and dreamt of, or am I in your eyes a woman like those that fatten in harems? I love you without knowing if I can steam you. I love you because you please me, and perhaps someday I shall be forced to hate you. You will love me as you understand love, as you can love. What I have sought for vain in others, I shall not, perhaps, find in you, but I can always believe that you possess it. I shall be able to interpret your reveries and fill your silences with eloquence. I shall give to your actions the intentions that I wish them to have. Let us remain thus. Do not learn my language, and I shall not look for, in yours, words to express my doubts and my fears. I want to be ignorant of what you do with your life, and what part you play among your fellow men. I do not even want to know your name. Hide your soul from me, that I may always believe it to be beautiful. Aww, isn't that just beautiful? Like, that makes me want to fall in love, honestly. It makes me want to love. But okay, so the reason why I could and was able to relate so much to this, I feel like it was because when I read it, I was kind of in love with this guy that didn't speak my language and that also didn't have any like social media or whatsoever. So I really didn't know much about him, but I didn't care. And obviously we both spoke English, so we were actually good. Like, there was no trouble like to communicate. But I do feel like there are just some words, for instance, in my language, Spanish, that I cannot find the right word in English for. And I just think that there is something about beautiful about each language that shouldn't be compromised for the sake of making it understandable to everyone. And at the same time, I feel like just now, because of the age that we're living in, you know, this digital age, like social media age, we just feel like we need to know absolutely everything about the person that we're interested in. And it's like we are able to find out everything on the internet about anyone, almost, except if you're me and you choose to date guys that have no Instagram, Facebook, or absolutely nothing. But anyway, so I just thought how remarkable it was to be okay with that uncertainty and that mystery of not really knowing that other person and who they are, like what part they play among their friends, like of just not knowing anything. And the fact that that doesn't matter and that does not compromise the relationship that you want to have with them, I feel like that is just something super hard to find now. And I don't know, there's just something really stuck to me. And also in the book, there's a letter that she writes to Alfred de Musset, and she's just super sweet, like super gentle, and almost, she sounds like a mother, honestly, like writing to her child, and she calls him child, and it's just weird. But I guess that at the end of the day, what I really respect about George Sand is not that she dressed up like a man in order to be respected, because again, I still think that this is like putting a band-aid on the wound, but because she made a very strong statement that women could have manly qualities and not necessarily lose her feminine attributes, that she could be strong, but at the same time, she showed her love in a very, again, tender and gentle way. She was a woman that understood way too early that she did not have to be liked for the reasons she, well, women were taught to be liked. And I say this too early because it was not an age where women understood that it wasn't their full-time job to make themselves likable. And it is something that actually wasn't quite understood even a century later. And even today, I think it's still an issue. But okay, my favorite line in this letter, I think it is when she writes, "I love you because you please me." Because it says so much about having the audacity to ask for something in return, for giving a license to women to condition their love, and that it doesn't have to be also one-sided, and it is not only about women given and given. And reading her letter, you know, in contrast to the other letters in the book written around the same time by other women like Claire Claremont, Maria Vignes, Jane Welsh, there is a difference in the tone. I could sense a I don't deserve you, you're superior kind of thing in all these letters versus George Sand's that it was, I love you because you please me. And it is funny because recently a friend of mine asked me like some dating advice. I don't know why they keep asking me dating advice. I've been single since 1996, but okay. So basically, obviously, there's not a lot of dating, actual dating, like one-on-one going on because of the pandemic, but there are obviously a lot of like virtual dates going on right now. So there's this guy, right? And my friend was like, I really want to talk to him, but he needs to reach out first and he hasn't. So now I have to wait like X amount of days and I am going to like his pictures so he like notices me or something like that. And I was like, yo, I'm literally doing research on this woman that had to dress like a man just she could talk to them. Like all we have to do is just slide into someone's DMs. Like just do it. But honestly, I feel like we're all equally afraid, men and women, to put ourselves out there. And, you know, we have all these new codes in our new dating world about, I don't know, the guy should text first and no one should double text, or a guy should wait X amount of days to ask the girl out or whatever. And I mean, I used to obey by these rules, not gonna lie, but honestly, after learning this and just doing this whole thing, I'm just like, it would be crazy not to do whatever we want. So now I want you to go and text that person. No, I'm just kidding. Don't text anyone if you don't want to. But this is a sign you were looking for to do not text your ex. Just kidding. Do whatever you want. But yeah, I was just thinking that and I thought it was interesting. So I digress. Honestly, shot every time I lose my train of thought. George Sand. So I found this quote by Honoré de Balzac. I don't know if it's like true because the website I found this didn't look like legit, but I liked it, so I'm going to share it. And so Honoré de Balzac was one of the many lover affairs that George Sand had. And allegedly he said, "What will become of the world when all women are like George Sand?" To which I answer, I don't know. But I will love to see it. So that would be it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know. I will leave my socials in the show notes. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that by leaving a review. I am Alma Limon. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you come back next Monday for a new one. Bye. Adios. Ciao. Okay, bye.